Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about the drum loop there. Waiting to hear back as to whether we're on the air. In the chat room, the line appears, Bob has eschewed the third switch. All is lost. No, we're sending. Oh, me. Not again. Oy. Okay, all right. Finally, he threw it. Hey, he made it. No, I threw it at 6:00 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, but the interweb tubes are, you know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Yes, dear?
It's the Gremlins, Bob.
No, dear, I don't think it's Gremlins. Oh, no, we're rolling. Thank you, Randy and PA, noting I've got you on iTunes, Bob. Wonderful. There we are. Okay, so we will not have any opening drama this evening. Agnes Viking Warrior Princess was already out of mic range, but she waved because. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, said, Hey, Agnes VWP. Agnes VWP, by the way, stands for Agnes Viking Warrior Princess. You know, because she is. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the madcap real-time merriment that is the extravaganza of The Horn chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right into the zaniness. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Arthur. Good evening, Laborman. Good evening, Lady Tsuki. Good evening, Little Gray. Good evening, Sentient Being. Good evening, Tim from L.A. And good evening, Zakatan. Cool. Cool word, Zakatan. Zakatan. Never mind. No, that was Chaka Khan. Never mind. It's Friday on the front porch, and we've made it through a week of broadcasting, and I guess I'm just feeling a little bit silly. But it is good to be here. No, you were not having any dead air, drunken lesbian Tom over at FYI.com. It was the interweb tubes. But we are live. We are live this 18th day of March, 2016. This is real live, honest-to-goodness, progressive broadcasting on The Horn. And it's Friday on the front porch. That means in about 56 minutes from now, 55 minutes and change, we will go to what we lovingly refer to as Friday on the front porch. Yes, and thank you very kindly, Robert, in Australia. There you are, 9:03 a.m., and you're on in Oz. Hey, I'm mid-morning. Well, I'm the last part of the morning drive and the early part of the mid-morning ratings market there in New South Wales. Yeah, we've got a little slowdown on the Koala Expressway there. No, never mind. and Jack in Shreveport says, no, not a gremlin. What car would Mr. Potato Head drive? People almost always get this right. What car would Mr. Potato Head drive? All right, well, at least we've got something to get us started. Thank you, Jack. And yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Ron in the verdant hills of Greenbrier County notes, it's still a face for radio. And that it is, that face being my face. Ron and I had a little get-together in Fayetteville this afternoon. We got together so that Ron could bring me some Canadian goods. Yes, and they are some of which have already been very much enjoyed. Others will be enjoyed later. Get a haircut. Yeah, but get a haircut, hippie. No, I'm letting it grow out. I'm not gonna quit till it's about middle of my back. Yeah, it'll help if I, you know, like if I'm drafted or anything. Right. So if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, it is easy, and it's a lot of fun. We've had some Jim Dandy Fridays on the front porch of late. One could almost say a string of them, with some really great conversation and really good participation. If you've never participated, we do Friday on the Front Porch via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, capably moderated, yea verily, over these years. By Sparky. And if you've never done it before, if you've never participated before, but you would like to, use Skype, which is easy, and send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and in your message say FOTFP or Friday on the Front Porch or something along those lines so that Sparky will know that if he adds you to his list, you won't immediately turn around and ask him to help you transfer funds on behalf of the cancer stricken widow of a Nigerian prince. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, of course, this is a listener supported undertaking. We try to raise $200 every evening, and this evening is no different from any other. We try to raise $200 an evening, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and 64 at $3.13. Okay? The interface for doing that is under the tab Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And the mailing address, if you prefer to operate that way, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. For checks and money orders, please, because we've had things disappear in the mail, everything from photographs to actual cash. And remember, we have to share space. Not the same box space, but we share. We go to the mail. We go pick up the mail. Bossman Wayne, not me. Bossman Wayne goes to pick up the mail in the same building where the Klan goes to pick up its mail. Hey, you have no idea how that drives me nuts. But just so you know, right? Okay. So, but what do we got this evening? We got some loose ends to we got some loose ends to clear up some interesting audio here in a few minutes, among other things. Speaking of the Klan, we've got some Klan bullying. Yeah. And this little bit from ancient history, and by ancient history I mean more than a couple of years ago. The piece appears in Salon.com. I read it and kind of had to scroll back up real quick and ask myself, check to see if it said, you know, The Onion, because shortly before that I'd read an Onion piece talking about how a bloodied Mitch McConnell walked out of the Capitol building today, holding in the air the severed head of Garland Merrick, declaring, "When I said there will be no hearings, there will be no hearings." Yeah, that's a little bit. It's a little bit strong for funny, but well. It was reported that Chinless Mitch, the half man half turtle, had actually placed a phone call to Judge Merrick, whom, interestingly enough, Chinless Mitch McConnell had voted in favor of when he was confirmed to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, to tell him not to bother coming by the Capitol or anything because nobody would answer the door. That no one would be willing to speak to him, as if, you know, the merely hearing his voice might mesmerize them into some sort of frenzy of actually doing their duty. Yeah, so, no, they're still clinging fast to the idea that they don't want any moderate anti-criminal defendant, apparently brilliantly minded nominees for the court. No, they by God, they'll do everything they can to make sure that a Republican gets into office in November, and then by God, they will they'll see to it that that a fitting successor to fat dead Tony Scalia, plucked from this mortal coil. Untimely, in the prime of life, at the tender age of 79, is chosen by a Republican president, or by Hillary, whichever. So, you know, there's that. Not, don't, no, don't come over here. No, Judge Garland. This is Chinless Mitch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't come over here. We don't want your kind here. No, don't come. No, don't bother yourself. I understand you're on the D.C. circuit. I understand it's just a quick cab ride. I understand you even got a limousine. But don't be coming over here. Let's not make this any more embarrassing for us all than it already is. And that's exactly what Merrick Garland should do. He should go over and stand in front of the Senate office building with a sign that says "We'll judge for food." Mm-hmm. Right. So that. But no, a little bit of time travel. Just a little bit of time travel back to, well, Sherman set the Wayback Machine for 1989 and Atlantic City. Brendan Gauthier, I don't know, has the story over at Salon. And you wouldn't, well, if you get through this story and go, yeah, I know, that's exactly what Paul McCartney would or Ringo would have done. No. there's just moments when you realize that there's no getting around the fact that the Rolling Stones are the biggest, most badass rock and roll band in all of rock and roll history. The title of the article is "The Night the Rolling Stones Fired Donald Trump." And here, I'll just share a little bit of it with you because it makes for such delicious reading. In 1989, the Rolling Stones' original members ended their seven-year hiatus and embarked on an ambitious and profitable 115-show tour of Europe and North America. The American leg, named after their comeback album Steel Wheels, began in August in Philadelphia and ended in December in Atlantic City. The final show at the Boardwalk Hotel, or the Boardwalk Hall, which had been formerly known as the Convention Center, aired on pay-per-view and, like the Miss America pageant also held at the hall, was to be sponsored by the adjacent Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino. Even in the late 80s, however, the Stones didn't want to be associated with Donald Trump. So they cut a deal with him, stipulating he wouldn't be involved in any promotional capacity outside of Atlantic City and, amazingly, wouldn't be allowed at the show itself. The story, told last summer and resurfaced on social media this week, illustrates just how deep the animosity went. In an interview with Polestar, Michael Cole, who was the tour promoter at the time, said, "On the night of the event, I get word that I have to come to the press room in the next building. I run to the press room in the next building. What do you think's happening? There's Donald Trump giving a press conference in our room." Now, remember, he had signed a contract stipulating that he would have nothing to do with the event. Michael Cole looked at him and said, at first Trump said, "They begged me to go up, Michael." And Cole said, "Stop it. Don't make a liar of yourself." And left. 5 minutes later, he gets another call saying that T-Rump had gotten back up behind the mic. And Cole said, "Donald, I don't know if I can control this. Stop it." And back in the dressing room, the Stones hear what's going on. I mean, this is something a little bit more contractually significant than removing all the brown M&Ms, which has its own contractual significance, but never mind. Keith Richards pulls out his knife and slams it on the table and says, "What the hell do I have you for? Do I have to go over there and fire him myself? One of us is leaving the building, either him or us." At which point Cole goes back to Trump and says, "One of the two things is going to happen. You're going to leave the building, and at 6:40 the Rolling Stones are going to speak on CBS News, or you're not going to leave the building, and I'm going to go on and do an interview to explain to the world why the pay-per-view was canceled." He literally looked at Trump, Michael Cole did, and said, "You're fired." And here, then, is a piece of British colloquial English that I have no idea what it means. He says, three Starkers he's with in trench coats. Two of them are putting on gloves, and the other one is putting on brass knuckles. I know we've got listeners in the UK. Oh, and by the way, speaking of the UK, just a moment of congratulations. Agnes and I were very, very happy to hear earlier that News Ninja Gene and his beloved Anne are both home and out of the hospital. And we are very, very happy indeed to hear that news. So welcome home, Gene and Anne. So I don't know what Starkers, spelled S-H-T-A-R-K-E-R-S. I assume it means thugs or heavies. Or maybe enforcers. Three Starkers he's with in trench coats. Two of them are putting on gloves. and the other one is putting on brass knuckles. And this is where it gets kind of beautiful. Well, as if Keith Richards slamming a knife on a table and says, "I don't know what we pay you for," isn't beautiful enough. At this point in time, the promoter, Michael Cole, just kind of goes, "Ah," and waves a finger in the air. At which point, his head of security got 40 of the crew with tire irons and hockey sticks and screwdrivers. At which point, Trump and his Starkers made a hasty exit. Isn't that cool? But isn't it also telling? Yeah. This is the man who is now the front runner for the Republican nomination, who walks around with goons with the black gloves and brass knuckles, and thinks nothing of breaching a contract. Remember last night we were talking about the Lochner era and the sweet and blessed privity of contract? Yeah. But when I read that, Keith went up about a million, billion, jillion percentage points in my estimation. He was already pretty high as it was. You see what I did there? But even more so. As far back as 1989, they knew that lump of fascism was pure poison, and they didn't want their highly successful tour and the pay-per-view culmination of it to be ruined. But they were willing to not go on because Donald Trump was trying to associate himself with it. He couldn't resist. "Oh, we're going to have the best roadies and the best production talent and the best rock and roll band in the world. It'll be great. It'll be wonderful. It'll be excellent." What an asshole. I don't care how many pictures there are of him swanning around at various and sundry 1% weddings. No, I just don't. He's an asshole. But he's an asshole that America, some portion of it, thinks is downright presidential. How bad is it? Well, I guess notice has been served, because sitting around somewhere in Utah, because even though he's got a mansion in California, I guess he still thinks of himself as a Utah voter, because Utah's caucuses are on Tuesday this coming. Bishop Willard Romney issued a statement, put it out on the Facebook, and here it is. Oh, no, Jack, that's not it, at least not the way it was used in the quote. Starkers, S-H-T-A-R-K-E-R-S, Starkers, Jack, pointing out, British slang meaning to be incredibly intoxicated or high. No, there was an H in there, S-H-T-A-R-K-E-R-S. But no. Bishop Willard Romney has felt the godly light emanating from Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eaten future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time. Yeah. And in advance of the Utah caucuses, because the Utah carcasses, because his influence is so profound, Bishop Willard Romney said the following: "This week in the Utah nominating caucus, I will vote for Senator Ted Cruz. Today there is a contest between Trumpism and Republicanism." Bullshit! Trumpism is Republicanism. Trumpism is exactly what the Republican Party has been building toward since the first time that Ronnie Reagan ran for President of the United States against Gerald Ford in the Republican primaries in 1976. There's no you can't slide a playing card between Trumpism and Republicanism. The objection of the Republican Party is that Donald Trump is showing the Republican Party for everything that it is and has been and will be. It's nasty. It's xenophobic. It's bigoted. It's misogynistic. It's vile. It's filthy. It's nasty. It's dirty. It's ugly. It's hateful. Did I mention racist? But to quote some comedy piece from a couple of weeks back, Republicans don't do that. They just insinuate it well enough that it can be understood by the voters. But they don't say it out loud. Right?
Today there is a contest between Trumpism and Republicanism. Through the calculated statements of its leader, Trumpism has become associated with racism, misogyny, bigotry, xenophobia, vulgarity, and most recently, threats and violence. How about that? In other words, everything the Republican Party has stood for, again, since Ronald Reagan ran against Gerald Ford in the 1976 Republican primaries. "I am repulsed by each and every one of these." Right.
Because none of that has ever surfaced in any campaigns with which Bishop Willard Romney was associated. I mean, what can you imagine? Can you even imagine what it would have been like if in the campaign of 2012, Bishop Willard Romney had said something misogynistic like, "I have binders full of women"? Yeah, oh, he did say that. Oh. I mean, what if the Republican Party had spent a generation hopping up and down and squealing and bellowing about how we have to take away a woman's right to control the workings of her own internal reproductive organs? Oh, wait, they've all been doing that all along. I mean, what if the Republican Party had adherents and actual politicians who walked around and described things like legitimate rape versus illegitimate rape? I mean, wait. What if a central plank of the Republican platform each and every presidential election had been some nasty language about sending them illegals back across the border? It has been. Never mind. So we've got the misogyny. We've got the xenophobia. Can we just take racism as read insofar as all the racist white former Democrats in the Deep South became Republicans after LBJ signed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act into law and then said we've lost the South for an entire generation. Mm-hmm. And, of course, LBJ was wrong. We didn't lose the South for an entire generation. We lost the South forever. Although historians might not paint it this way, I think it is a valid argument to suggest that after the passage and enactment of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, you could say that a big chunk of the South re-seceded. Yeah. It was the second insurgency, the second post-Civil War insurgency. So yeah, Bishop Willard is repulsed by each and every one of these. The only path that remains to nominate a Republican rather than Mr. Trump is to have an open convention. At this stage, the only way we can reach an open convention is for Senator Cruz to be successful in as many of the remaining nominating elections as possible. Wait a minute. He's not endorsing... Wait. That's not an endorsement of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is it? LARP. Maybe from now on, every time we mention Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, in addition to all the other stuff I have to say, I need to go... No, this is an endorsement of an open convention. And I am reminded of the fact that just a couple of weeks ago, Bishop Willard Romney turned the lights back on at all of his 2012 presidential campaign organizations. No, honey, you go ahead. You just keep trotting around out there on Rafalka. I just thought I'd wander down and reinvigorate my old campaign. Don't worry about it. I'll be right back. I'll be right back, sweetums. Yeah, just gonna flip the switch on that old Romney for president thing. Just see if it still cranks and everything. I mean, you let something like that sit around in the garage, you got to crank it up every now and then. That's all I'm doing, sweetie. I'll be right back. Yes. Give Rafalka a sugar cube. Yes, absolutely. So Bishop Willard is in favor of an open convention. He continues, I like Governor John Kasich. I have campaigned with him. He has a solid record as governor. I would have voted for him in Ohio, but a vote for Governor Kasich in future contests makes it extremely likely that Trumpism would prevail. But then again, Trumpism is going to prevail no matter who the winner of the Republican primary of Utah and other states is, because Trumpism is Republicanism. Republicanism is Trumpism. This is the reflexive property of political fascism, is it not? It's not the additive property. It's the reflexive property, I think. Although I don't remember my properties from math very well. A equals B. If A equals B, then B equals A. Isn't that reflexive? Trumpism equals Republicanism, therefore Republicanism equals Trumpism? Right. I will vote for Senator Cruz, and I encourage others to do so as well, so that we can have an open convention and nominate a Republican. Me. Remember me. Yeah, don't you wish you'd... Yeah, no. Yeah, really? You still hate my fucking guts? And... You still remember how I alienated half the country by saying 47% of America were moochers who were sucking off the governmental teat? You still remember that, do you? You remember how I ran away from Obamacare, even though Obamacare was almost a carbon copy of Romney Care in Massachusetts? You remember that, do you? Yeah, you do? Yeah. Shit. And Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, responded on Twitter by saying, "Thank you, Governor." To his credit, he didn't go all Daffy Duck and say, "Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother." But that's about what it works out to. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, it's not reflexive. We're going to have to figure it out. A equals A is the reflective. Well, that's still republicanism equals Trumpism, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, out in the Twitter sphere, T-Rump responded by saying, "Failed presidential candidate Mitt Romney, the man who choked and let us all down, is now endorsing Lion Ted Cruz. This is good for me. Failed presidential candidate Mitt Romney was campaigning with John Kasich and Marco Rubio, and now he's endorsing Ted Cruz." Look, I despise Donald T. Rump. I wouldn't piss in his mouth if his goddamn guts were on fire. But in that, he's right. This isn't a political question. This isn't some philosophical soul searching that's taking place inside the GOP. This is the GOP trying to protect their phony baloney jobs. And Trump isn't giving them the harumphs that they so crave. Harumph, harumph, harumph. You better watch your ass. So, I mean, you get the, you understand that this is just a fraud. This is just a little walk through the House of Mirrors. By the way, thank you very kindly. Ron in Raleigh says, "Starker, overzealous lackey," and that it comes from the German. Yeah, I'll be darned. Okay. Although, Robert looked it up and says that a man of great strength, a strong, stout fellow, and that its origins are in Yiddish. Who knew? All right. So the Republican Party is having fits. Because the Republican Party is being threatened. It's being existentially threatened. I mean, and this happens from time to time. It happened to the Whigs. Who, incidentally, the rump of which became the Republican Party. Abraham Lincoln, when he went to the Congress of the United States, went as a Whig. Uh-huh. And it was the Whigs who worked with the Know-Nothings and various and sundry other little disaffected groups to form the nucleus of the new Republican Party that propelled Lincoln to office in 1860. So, these things do happen. The Republicans of the Jeffersonian era morphed into the Democratic Party of Andrew Jackson, genocidal maniac. These things happen, and we're witnessing it right now. And what it becomes? Well, it may just become a full-blown American fascist party, which the Republican Party has been since at least Ronald Reagan. You know, through the Eisenhower years and even up to and including Nixon and Ford, the Republican Party was just a sort of crass place that the money went so that they could talk to each other and pretend that they had values and morals. But starting in 1968 with the Southern Strategy, the Republican Party began to change, and it embraced the Klan, and it embraced the white conservative citizens' councils, and it embraced racism, and it embraced a brutal, bloody form of nationalism. How many forms of nationalism are there that aren't brutal and bloody? And this is where that road winds up. I don't know why people are pretending to be surprised. This is the Republican, and some of us aren't. This is the Republican Party that has been a growing and a morphing through the years. It wasn't an outlier. It wasn't surprising when David Duke announced his support for Trump. Klansmen aren't Democrats anymore. They used to be. Back when my grandfather Kincaid was in the Klan, they were. But the Democratic Party became inclusive. The Democratic Party embraced, perhaps not as much as one would like for it to have happened, but the Democratic Party embraced civil rights. The Democratic Party embraced the struggle for the rights of women. And these were things up with which the American right wing could not put. And so they became Republicans. See, this is the history that you have to explain whenever some idiot Republican says, "Yeah, well, Dr. King was a registered Republican. Huh? What about that, smart feller?" And you say, "Well, yes, he was, but he wouldn't be now. Because your party, he was a registered Republican because the Klansmen were in the Democratic Party. The Klansmen then became, after he was murdered, the Klansmen became Republicans, and so he would have become a Democrat. Because there's nothing there to fight to save." And then again, I think it's probably an open question as to whether Dr. King really was a Republican. But they're coming unglued. And see, one of their problems is that so many of their most respected spokes creeps are gospel sharps and Jesus hustlers. You may recall a couple of nights ago on Prayer Meeting Wednesday, we had that clip of Kevin Swanson. Is that his name, Kevin Swanson? Freak? The guy who wants to execute Girl Scout leaders? Yeah, Kevin Swanson. Talking about he and Franklin Graham being the only Christian leaders in America with the courage to stand up to the gay Borg of the Girl Scouts of America. Resistance is fabulous. Mm-hmm. Well, enter Franklin Graham, Hustler. Gave an interview he did on the Christian Broadcasting Network, which is actually the extremely capitalist broadcasting network. And he laid out for people who think that his opinion has the weight of, you know, fly shit or anything greater, the choice that America faces. Might want to get a hockey puck, Andy. Just saying.
You mentioned that America is at a crossroads or tipping point. What's the crossroads or tipping point? And how is 2016 different from past elections?
There is a very strong movement in this country of the left. And they have control of so much of our government now. This next election, our country is broken. The Republican Party is broken. The Democratic Party is broken. And there are people who want to change the Constitution. And that will happen if the Christians don't let their voice be heard.
Okay, let's just take that as read. There's liberals out there, the left, and we want to change the Constitution. Well, he says that like it's a bad thing. You know what? If the Constitution was not supposed to be changed, there would not be a means of amending it built into it. I mean, and there wouldn't be mention of that Article 5 Constitution, of which the blatherheads like Mark Levin and on our side that Wolfpack bunch want to engage, even though everybody who's ever had anything to do, well, you know, back at the time of the framing, everybody who had anything to do with it said, no, let's not do this. We're just going to put this in there. No, we don't mean for anybody to use it. You know, it's like an ashtray in a car now. Just put your spare change in it. And, yeah, Steve in New York has already cut to the chase. What exactly do we on the left control? Answer, not fucking much. Yeah, but still. We'll take that as read. There are people who want to change the Constitution. There's always somebody out there who wants to change the Constitution, as Earther notes in the chat room. Gosh, I always wish that half of what these bozos say were true. You know, our government is so leftish. But let's remember that the rise of people like Franklin's daddy, Billy, was funded by brutal American capitalism. Yeah, Billy Graham was born out and made out of the right-wing capitalism's, is there any other kind, desire to make sure that the poors didn't get all uppity and start thinking that maybe poor people ought to have a greater share and say in what the government was doing and what it was spending its money on. That's where Billy Graham comes from. Just like a whole bunch of other preachers were funded by the right wing. It had nothing to do with religion. It had nothing to do with salvation. It had everything to do with capitalism. Okay, well, let's get a little bit more from Franklin here. Take it away, Frank.
Last election, there were 20 to 30 million Christians, evangelicals, who chose not to vote. There is a left movement within the evangelical community that are telling people, if so-and-so wins or if this person wins, don't vote. I'm just telling you, I don't care who wins and who's out there, you have to vote. And I'm not going to tell people who to vote for. I'm not going to do that. Let God tell you who to vote for.
And of course, I speak for God, and I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, you know, except, you know, ixnay on the Omikays. And all the Democrat days are Omikays. All right? Are we ear clay? Good.
What ways do you envision Christians living out their faith besides the Word of God in prayer?
Getting involved in politics, or if a person can't do that, finding Christians in their community that would be willing maybe to offer themselves for public service.
You've said that neither Republicans nor Democrats can turn this country around. Only God and our faith in Jesus Christ can do that. So how do we live that out beyond the election?
Well, first of all, we have two parties. So you're going to have to vote for one or the other.
Okay, Sidney. He's got a bucket of paint and a brush. Nah, he's working with a roller, isn't he? And he's sooner or later, no, not going to paint toward, not going to back up toward the doorway. He's going to back up toward the corner.
And just, you have to look at each person, because I know that in some of the races where we are locally, some are in one party that I find better than the other party. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I've resigned from the Republican Party. I'm now unaffiliated.
Yeah, I'll bet the son of a bitch still writes a check, though, don't you?
Because I'm just fed up with the Republicans who have both houses, and they continue to fund these programs like Planned Parenthood and so forth, which I just is wrong. And
it is absolutely wrong for poor women to be able to get the pap smear. If God wanted a poor woman to get the pap smear, he wouldn't have made cervical cancer in the first place. Because God is love. Got it? Funding Planned Parenthood is wrong because you can't have the women's out there making sure they ain't a dying. Because Jesus died for us, and it is our job to die like him, miserable and anguished and sorry and a hurting and a aching and a suffering. If suffering on the cross was good enough for Christ Jesus, it's good enough for poor women, not wealthy Republican women who can afford to go and get their pap smears elsewhere.
Republicans don't do anything about it. So I've just left both parties because I have no hope in either party. But there are individuals that we can get behind. Don't stay home. And listen to some of these left within the evangelical community who are saying, oh, don't bother to vote. That's wrong. We will lose if we don't get engaged. And after the election is over...
Exactly. You lose if you don't get engaged, because you can't have a traditional family values political marriage without a family values engagement first. You're going to lose if you don't get engaged.
Then we've got to get behind the Christians who are representing us in office and stand behind them and let them hear from us from time. Send them an email. Send them a note.
Dear Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future booger-eating future king of America, I love you. Your waxy sheen just tells me that the light of Jesus is a-glowing from inside you.
Because what happens is a lot of people go to Washington or they get into office and they think, I don't have to listen to the Christians anymore. I want to hold these people accountable. If they don't do what they say they're going to do, then they need to hear from us. And they need to hear from us in a big way.
If God answers your prayers on this tour, what would be your top three accomplishments?
New jet.
Godly men and women running for office across this country, not just in this election, but in the next 2 years and those elections, and next 2 years after that, those elections. And if we can have three accomplishments, it's getting Christian men and women in office, it's getting the Christians to go out and vote, and I hope we'll have a strong president. When we get up on the Capitol steps, I'm going to lead everybody in prayer.
Well, hot diggity shit. Of course, when he says get Christians in office, he means his kind of Christians. You know, the ones who sit around worrying about fetuses but don't give a flying fuck at a rolling donut about hungry children going to bed at night in America. His kind of Christians. You know, the ones who sit around and worry about lady parts, not the Christians who, you know, live up to the whole I was hungry and you fed me, I was naked and you gave me clothing, none of that bullshit. So that's that sissy Jesus. That's that sissy liberal Jesus. So, by Christians he means, you know, Christians, not them Episcopals out there anointing women to be priests and letting homosexuals be priests none of that. None of that Sojourners horse shit out there talking about how Jesus loved the poor. Fuck the poor! They ain't got no money to give to my ministry. Fuck them! Right, Franklin?
And have people confess the sins of our nation, confess their own personal sins, the sins of their fathers. This is Nehemiah chapter 1. That's what Nehemiah did. Then God gave Nehemiah favor. We need favor. We need God's favor once again in this country. And the only way...
How are you going to confess the sins of your father? I mean, I loved my daddy a whole lot. But I don't know everything he sinned over. And seeing how it was pretty difficult to get him through the doors of a church. When he died, we didn't get him through the doors of a church. And that's pretty tough. Seeing how he was pretty tough to get through the doors of a church, I'm reckoning he's probably a big time sinner. I mean, you know, every now and then he drank a beer. He would. Back when you had to drive 11 miles from Florence, Alabama, to the Tennessee state line, he'd take a little back road to a little joint, joint on a dirt road. I don't know if I could even find it anymore. I'm sure it doesn't even exist. Called Barry's. Barry's up there in, what would that have been? Wayne County, Tennessee, maybe. And he'd get him a case of Sterling Big Mouths. He liked that. He liked Stroh's, but he was partial to them Sterling Big Mouths. Came in a sort of a brown barrel-shaped bottle with a big old mouth on it, on the bottle, about the size of a silver dollar. There's an antiquated reference. Somewhere out there, there's a 19-year-old listening to the program going, what the fuck is a silver dollar? But it was big. It was big around as a golf ball, maybe a little bit bigger. But he would drink him some beer. Yep. And every now and then, he was known to use swear words when listening to Cincinnati Reds baseball broadcasts. Yes. Wait, And I guess I'm confessing the sins of my father, just like that old fraud Nehemiah wanted me to. But I ain't got a list. I mean, I'm sure there was a hell of a lot more. Hoo-wee! I mean, the day before we was getting ready to come up here to West Virginia from Alabama, and. He just did what, you know, he was part of the American dream, the middle class American dream, and we'd had the 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan for a turquoise in color for about 5 years, and it was time for a new Newport. And so we went to a Chrysler dealership run by a fellow named Don Burleson. Burleson, down in Russellville, Alabama. You got to say it like that. It's actually Russellville, but you pronounce it Russellville. And for reasons not apparent to me or to my mother, he was quite taken with a 1971 Newport. I think it had a 383 four barrel in it. That might have had something to do with it. But it was a sort of metallic brown in color. One could say it was like sparkling shit. And so we sat around, he bought that car. I think he'd been sneaking off to Don Burleson's for about 2 weeks, car shopping on the way home from work. But we bought that car. We didn't buy that car, he bought that car. And we sat around and sat around while they prepped it. You know, they washed it and brand new car. No used cars in the American dream, damn it. And long about, what felt like midnight, but was probably closer to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we cleaned out the 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan and put all our old Chrysler Newport Town Sedan junk in the new 1971 Newport and got in it and drove away. Now, remember, this thing had been up on the rack. It had been gone over. Yeah. And I've told this story before, but so the next morning we get up at the ass crack of dawn. Dad liked to get an early start. The interstate highway system was not complete by then, and there would be some detours onto two-lane roads, especially in places like, the biggest part of the trip is through Kentucky, and there'd be a good bit of it in Tennessee as well. I-65 was not done, so one had to get off and tour through the fireworks hell of Hendersonville and Goodlettsville and Loco Joe's and Crazy Charlie's. And we'd got up past the Alabama line into we're just south of Lawrenceburg when a fella pulls up next to us and through a series of gestures explains to us that there are sparks coming off of our car and that the gas tank was dragging on the ground. Mm-hmm. Well, that put a little bit of a kink in that trip to West Virginia, and we'd be a day late getting here because he'd knock off somewhere about Bowling Green or maybe Lexington or some such because he's just wore out and he'd worked all anyway. But yes, my father did unleash a torrent, a deluge of cussing. Although none of it ever that man would not say fuck. No, sir. No, sir. But he let loose of a deluge of swear words that had my mother in that still small voice. Kenneth. Right. And so I guess this is the kind of shit that the Franklin over here wants us to all be confessing. And then there was that time, you know, Depression era children. They didn't waste anything. And we'd had a lovely smoked ham that we'd been working on, eating on for a week or so. And my father loved nothing better than a razor sharp kitchen knife, and he was trying to trim the last little bits of ham off that ham bone because he knew there was going to be a pot of brown beans involved, and the flavor, children. I'm telling you, the flavor. And he caught himself a couple of times pulling that knife toward him, trying to get that the last little scraps of meat off that ham bone. And Kenneth, you dumb bastard. And he'd go back to doing it the right way. And he'd catch himself. He'd always cut towards yourself, and you'll never cut anybody else. And he'd go back to. And then finally it happened. It hung up on the bone. And then, and I mean, it was like that. I mean, that knife didn't hardly even touch him. And it laid him open. That little space there between the thumb and the index finger, clean to the bone, and he took to hollering. Not, ow, ooh, I'm hurting or nothing, but, Kenneth, you dumb bastard, you stupid son of a bitch, you saw it coming and you did it anyway, you jackass. So he did that, too. But I don't recall him ever screwing over a neighbor. Or anything, or cheating his employer out of so much as a goddamn minute. No. But you know, Frank here thinks that I've got to confess my daddy's sins, and I don't even know what all they were, and I don't want to know, because you know what, he wasn't nothing but a decent man. And good enough to stand before God Almighty and spit in his eye. How dare you think that I've sinned? When you consider the number of and quantity and quality of misery you've spread all over this planet. Right. Not to put too fine a point on it, but Franklin Graham can go fuck himself.
And the only way this is going to happen is through prayer.
What do you pray for when it comes to our country and our government?
Well, first of all, I pray that God would forgive me of my sins. And I can't stand up there and ask people to pray if there's...
That's going to be one long sumbitch of a prayer. Forgiving him of his. Oh, yeah.
Sin in my life. So I have to confess my sins and ask God to forgive me. But I pray that God would touch the hearts and the lives of individuals, and that he would put people in place in leadership of this nation who would recognize God, who would fear God.
You love the story of Nehemiah and how it parallels what's going on in America today. America's in distress. What needs rebuilding, and how do we become Nehemiahs?
Nehemiah prayed. And I'm going back to chapter 1. He prayed, and he fasted, and he prayed. And then he confessed his sins, the sins of his people, the sins of his fathers. Confess the sins of your family to God and ask for forgiveness. And then maybe God will give us favor. Church of Jesus Christ across this country prays and confess their sins, maybe God will give us favor like he gave Nehemiah.
But there's a problem there. I mean, that's the Christians doing all that praying. You got to figure it all gets canceled by the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Muslims and the Jews and the animists and the pagans and the Jainists and the Shintos and the Confucians, and then there's the atheists and the agnostics, and I don't see how they can ever overcome it. Devin asking, "Oh Bob, why the fuck are you giving this bastard airtime?" Why? Because he fits with the thesis, Devin. This Trumpism of which Bishop Willard Romney is so afraid. Well, there is, to use a phrase that got some currency back in the late 1960s, thanks to George Wallace, there is not a dime's worth of difference. There is not a dime's worth of difference between the right-winger that Franklin Graham... Oh, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. Oh, that son of a bitch is not... He's not a leftist. If he's not a Republican, it's because the Republican Party hasn't moved far enough right for him yet. And so, Ann Romney can clutch her pearls or Rafalka's bridle or whatever, and Willard can wring his hands till hell won't have him, or he gets called home to Kolob or what the hell ever. But it doesn't change the fact that this supposed crisis in the Republican Party is no crisis at all. It's no crisis at all. It's just another day. It's just Republicans being Republicans. And while I'm not going to vote for any of them, I'll say this much. Even Lindsey Graham, mercy sakes, Lindsey. Lindsey has come out, no, not that way, and said that if he has to, he'll vote for Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed, booger-eaten,
future king of America to save us all from the horrors of Donald Trump, when in fact there is a compelling argument to be made that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, and maybe this is heresy to some of you, I don't think, but maybe, there's a strong case to be made that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz as President of the United States would be an even greater horror. Because that evil little prick knows how government works. And he spent a lifetime figuring out ways to throw monkey wrenches into the workings of government. And he's got the finest legal education that this country can offer. And he's worked within legal circles and governmental circles, and he knows exactly what he wants to do to America. Not for America, but to America. T-Rump is a crass, self-aggrandizing megalomaniac. Cruz is a religious zealot with blood on his mind. Remember, it was Cruz who said he wanted to make Iraq and Syria glow in the dark. He wanted to see if sand would burn. It was Cruz who said that he wanted to carpet bomb the Middle East. So let's make no bones about it. Cruz is not a Republican alternative to Donald Trump. He's just another Republican running to fuck America. So at 12 minutes past the hour, we'll take a break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the front porch here on the Horn. And a reminder, we try to raise $200 every evening to keep this effort going. And it's all going to bills. It is all going to bills because we're getting eaten alive this month. You know, I won't even go through the cyphers and the gazettas for it. No. We just need to raise $200. God knows things being the way they are. If we could raise more than that, that would be good too. And maybe get a little jump on next week. Because it's there ain't no downhill. It's all uphill when you're doing independent media. It's all uphill. Because, lo and behold, we went out and, you know, looked in the mailbox, and it's just another day that the big George Soros money check didn't show up. So I guess that means that you, me, we, us, we're going to have to keep keep this thing alive until George finally figures out that progressive independent media are worth supporting. You know? Yeah. All right. So, again, if you've never participated and you want to jump in on the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. Sparky Dunk, and make sure you put something in there about Friday on the Front Porch or I want in on the conversation, something like that, okay? Okay, great. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It won't work.
work this morning. I can't punch in. There's too many questions under my skin. I did like they told me. I settled down. I'm going crazy working downtown. What do I do here? Why do I stay? Who are all these people I check in with every day? One man makes. They say that one man makes some money, one man makes some time. I need some time to think this over. I wanna make up my own mind. Psychic. I don't need a shrink. I need some time away from all this. I need a drink. What do I do here? And where will I go? Why am I so haunted by anything that I don't know? What difference one man makes? They say that one man makes some money, one man makes some time. I need some time to think this over. I wanna make up my own mind. I need some time to think this over. I wanna make up.
The one and only Will Kimbrough, and that is from the EP and from the album Home Away. That's a tune called Horseshoe Lake, and for a lot of years that was sort of it was almost like a theme song around here. When things started to get a little too thick, we took a trip to Horseshoe Lake, and that's. Will Kimbrough is amazing. Oh, what about the UUs, Tim from LA? Y'all are going to fry, okay? I mean, come on. You didn't think otherwise, did you? I mean, Jesus God. So let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. It is Friday on the front porch. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob. Can you hear me all right?
So far, so good.
Can you hear this?
I hear that very well.
That's the signal, the first. From the man cave, I'm doing this tonight.
Ah, and so everything's working.
Yep.
And you have folded space?
Mm-hmm. And I can walk outside and see my beautiful mountain.
With the snow on it?
The snow on it, and I can look to the north and barely see the other beautiful mountain, the top of the other beautiful mountain.
Namely,
through the trees. Once Mount Shasta.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be Mount Shasta, the near one being Mount Lassen.
Yeah.
I've learned my Northern California geography a little bit.
Once the leaves come on the big oak tree up by the ranch house out there, I won't be able to see it anymore. But it looks like the top of a big ice cream cone anyway.
Ooh, that sounds nice. Or maybe the head of a really tall glass of beer?
No.
Big ice cream cone. Okay, we're going to work with big ice cream cone.
I know Lassen a while ago. I give you the report on Lassen. There's a big, giant cloud to the north of it. And then there's a couple wispy ones. A couple hours ago, it looked like there was cloud out of the top of it, where the volcano fart is.
Yeah.
But now it's all clear. Just snow cap.
It's got to be a beautiful view.
Oh, it is.
And so,
especially this time of year.
Yeah. When was your last rain?
Couple 3 days ago, but it rained every day for over a week. Last week, the week before, and we had one weekend it just poured.
Well, meanwhile, I just saw in the chat room where Tim is asking again, what's snow? Tim saw some snow
on him. San Bernardino Mountains a while back.
San Bernardino? Yeah, San Bernardino.
It all melted.
Well, yeah. You saw it, though.
We can define snow as something you will never experience, Tim. And don't be all broke up about it. Just ask Ron.
Ron. Do we have snow in L.A.? We start panicking.
Well, you probably should, because that means that God's getting ready to take his vengeance or something.
Or
y'all didn't confess enough of your daddy's sins. It's something crazy. It's stupid. Yeah.
Our global warming's real, and we're seeing the effects.
Well, there's that. There's that.
Yes.
And in fact, Ron, formerly of the frozen and then sort of sloppy and muddy north, is actually chiming into the group this evening. From not that awfully far away from here. Good evening, Ron.
Good evening, Bob. I hope your day was as good as mine.
Mine was an absolute delight. And in fact, I'm indulging in a little Cubanadian cultural exchange, even as we speak.
Well, good. Was it worth my effort?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. These are, you know what? I popped the tube on one of those, and either you're a very diligent person and trimmed them all, or they trimmed them there.
They trimmed them there. I have no manual labor in that at all, except haulage.
Well, they're dandy. And had a lovely aroma, I might add.
Oh, good.
And one of my favorite shapes, I might add. I'm a big fan of the Corona.
Whatever it takes to keep happy, Bob.
Well, I am a happy camper.
Yeah. And I did take your advice as far as I could today to find Fayetteville Station Road.
Ah, Fayette Station, yes.
Must have been a little while since you've driven that road.
Why is that?
Because you can go down it for almost 2.5 miles. And then it turns one way.
Yes, it does. Probably should have mentioned that. but
hi, everybody. It's Alex. I missed you all.
Oh, hey, Alex.
Hey, Alex. How you doing?
Hi, everyone.
Are you working?
Hi, Alex.
Your primary is coming up next Tuesday.
Hi, Alex.
Yeah, I already voted in early voting 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Here in Arizona, Stan.
Yeah, I got an email blast from the Bernie campaign asking if I wanted to make a trip out to Arizona, but decided that I'd rather go see Bruce Springsteen at his last concert in the sports arena on Saturday night. So I've got a date for Saturday night. He calls the sports arena the dump that jumps. Apparently he's played there like 30 times. It was built like, I don't know how many years old it is. It's like roughly 60 years old almost. And it's most famous for having hosted the Democratic National Convention in 1960, at which JFK spoke.
You know that
Bernie's going to be here in Phoenix, and he's going to, and Jane, his wife, actually went to the tent city where Arpaio, looks over the tent city here. And so Jane Sanders went over there. There's a big thing how she went in to do a look around and stuff, and so that's what's going on here.
Okay. Well, Joe is a proud supporter of T-Rump, as I recall, right?
I think you do recall correctly, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you, Bob, and everybody for helping me not jump over a cliff, because this whole situation is beyond words and beyond thought, beyond rational, it's beyond anything now. So I'm just kind of holding on, you know, just hanging on there and just, you know, trying to survive until we get to the other side of whatever this is and onward to whatever else happens, you know.
So Alex, I guess you now know how the normal Germans felt, like the normal 60% of Germans felt during the early 30s when Hitler was rising to power.
What do you mean?
Well, the largest percentage of the vote Hitler ever got was one-third, basically, in the 1933 election, which brought him to power, and, you know, he was appointed chancellor by, who was that? Was it Hindenburg, I think?
So you're sort of equating the kind of apathy and also some people that, like us, we know what's going on, and it's hard for us to make big, great change, combined with those that are apathetic and those that are with him. So that's similar to what's going on now, that the American populace is a bunch of apathetic and or aiding and abetting and or people like us, a combination?
Yeah, I guess I was just trying to draw an analogy to the environment that, you know, at least I feel in the air today versus what it must have been like during the latter stages of the Weimar Republic in Germany, that's all. And the rise of extremism and, hate speech and hate politics. And, we've seen, I'm sure you saw that protest, the Trump supporter who cold cocked a young African-American guy with his elbow, elbow.
I've been seeing all of this stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it was really spooky. The Trump rally in Dayton, when the guy tried to like get on the stage from the side, and I had I saw a video like from the front of the audience looking towards Trump in the front of the stage, and it was just spooky. Just the people were saying, "Get him, get him, get him!" You know, grab him. I mean, it sounded, you know, I mean, just the hate in the air. You know, his voices.
Rick, you know, and we all know this. I mean, this culture has always been this way. Only now, at this juncture, they're given a carte blanche and feel more comfortable in allowing themselves to spew their hatred and the guns mixed with that and the ability to walk around. I see vets every day, and most of them it's very easy for them to tell me either on the phone or in person how Obama is, negative things about Obama. He's right. The problem for all their, things that are going on with them. And the people they're all carrying guns. And when I ask them, why do you carry guns? Most of the answers are, I'm afraid that somebody's going to come into my home and harm my family. Or there are people out there that are going to attack me. So there's this undercurrent of, it's not really a fear. They're just, a lot of them are just racist, and they don't want to say it, so they want to carry guns because they can, because if anybody of color wants to approach them,
that they want to, they feel very good about the fact that they can shoot people.
They can shoot them.
I don't know, Alex. I think a lot of the reason these people, you know, say the things they do and act the way they act and feel they got to carry a firearm is they're just scared shitless. They're afraid of living, basically. They're afraid of anyone else that might come into their orbit.
Well, I can't say that PTSD doesn't play a role, but a lot of them have not seen. I mean, I'm talking, there's a lot of non-combat vets out there as well. I mean, there's a theme of somebody's going to come in to my home and harm my family, or I need to walk around in the environment with a gun because those are those out there. They're going to harm me mentality that just is pervasive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe, do you find it's worse in Arizona, Stan, than it is in some other states you've lived or not?
Well, in New York City, well, New York is different because, of course, they've always had very stringent, you know, it's a different mentality in New York. But right. In New Mexico, where I've lived for many years, it was similar. Oregon, Washington State, even though there's a lot of really right-wing righties, it wasn't as, I didn't experience such vehemence. But here in Arizona, Stan, it's more intense than I've ever experienced it.
Interesting. Well, so are you volunteering for any, like, knocking on doors to get Bernie voters out?
No, I don't have any energy. I'm too busy working my ass off and fighting my supervisors that are abusing me. But I voted, you know.
That's good. So that whole work situation is still going on with you, unfortunately.
Oh, I won't even get into the details, but it's reaching a hype of going to the top brass and grievance against them and the whole thing going on. But it's caused great stress and trauma for me this whole year, but hopefully this will come to an end soon. But anyway, I don't have the energy to go knocking around doors and stuff, but all my life I've been doing that. So I feel like I've done a lot. And so now, you know, I voted. That's as much as I can do now. That's about it.
It sounds like you got a lot on your plate, and that's a very stressful situation to be working at a workplace at which, you know, and being supervised by somebody against whom you've filed a grievance.
Yeah.
You know? So.
But justice will prevail.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they messed with the wrong woman there, you know. This guy did anyway.
It's two women.
These women messed with the wrong woman.
Well, hopefully there'll be a positive outcome. The union's helping me, so this is just the beginning of this whole process. So okay. It looks like hopefully. And, you know, at this Phoenix VA, they just fired last week the medical director and somebody else. Where there's more controversy at this place, so it's really horrible. But they hired a new chief of nursing who seems brand new, who the union says that we're going to go to with my problem here. So hopefully this will all be resolved. That's all I have to say about that. But nice to speak to you, Rick, and hopefully your dating dreams will come true. Don't date anybody that's a Republican or conservative.
Well, I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm
mixed marriage. Mixed marriages never work.
Yeah, well, you know, the lady I'm dating is she's actually a physician who's now a hospital administrator. She used to be a surgeon. She operated, like, she was a urologist and a surgeon. So
should she operate on penises?
I think bladder issues, bladder cancers and stuff like that is the sense I got. So I don't know what her politics are. I don't know that she's a real political person. So
first thing you have to find out immediately. Are they religious? And what are their political views? 1, 2, 3. Deal breaker.
Well, she's not that religious, although she goes to church occasionally. But, in her profile, she said religion doesn't play a major role in her life. So,
well, it's up to you. I mean, if something's important, like I know me. The deal breaker is if you have any kind of religiosity at all, or if you're not a progressive person, boom, you're out.
Well, you know what they say about religion. I mean, everybody believes in God who lives in a foxhole, and you know, if you're a guy and meet a woman who says she's a Christian, then you can be a Christian for the night, as that song goes from Mark Cohen, I think, is the guy's name, Walking in Memphis or whatever.
Yeah, ma'am, she said, "Are you a Christian, child?" And I said, "Ma'am, I am tonight."
Yeah, there you go.
Well, if it works for you for the night, my friend, go for it.
And then there's John Lennon who said, "Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, all right."
That's right. That's right.
I'll be anything you want me to be, baby.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to the show. It's going to be about what he's playing is Bob. You played a cut from the river, I think, on your
It was the title track. Yeah.
Yeah, and that got me to thinking, oh, geez, let me look at the tickets and see if I could get a resale ticket. So I ended up, like, finding something that I could have gotten for, like, you know, a little over 100. And the price went up to 130 by the time I, you know, Laura told me that she could go. So, you know, I paid a little extra for the tickets. But, you know, I figure it's going to be a good show because he's going to play the entire album.
He doesn't do a bad show.
Yeah, and then, like, another 13 to 15 songs. So it's like... You know, and the guy apparently doesn't take a break still, even though he's 66. So it's like, you know, 3 hours, 3.5 hours straight, roughly, of a concert, you know. I saw him last in, I saw him in Des Moines, Iowa. I think I saw him at Hilton Coliseum, where I think the Cyclones play their basketball games for his the Born in the USA tour, I think, in 85, I think, something like that. So... It's been like 30 years since I've seen him live, but you know, he's a hell of a performer. He had that crowd in the palm of his hand. I mean, he's just,
back when I was 13 years old, 1973, I saw the original Broadway production of Air. You know, I was living in New York City, where I'm from, and at the end of
somebody's humming bad.
Somebody's vacuuming or something.
Not me. I don't know. I saw Hair, and at the end of Hair, at the end of the show, all the hippie girls and guys sang their Let the Sunshine In, and so snowflakes came down, and they had flowers, and they would run into the crowd with their flowers and handed the flowers to different audience members at random. And I remember sitting there, and one of these young hippie guys ran over and gave me a flower, took me by the hand, led me on stage, and at the finale of Hair... I'm standing on stage with everyone singing, with the snowflakes falling down, which were like ivory snow, with and you can imagine the vibration of the live orchestra and the singing and the lights and these people, and I'm standing there with them, and they're all holding my hand, and I mean, I'll never forget that as long as I live. It was incredible.
Wow.
So that just brought me back to that, you know, moment, and there I was with my purple bodysuit, purple bell bottoms and yellow clogs and my long hair down to my waist.
you're only 13. This is on Broadway?
Yeah.
Cool. Wow. Well, there you go. That, I guess that was a moment. I mean, you were sort of in heaven for that moment, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the perks of growing up in a place like New York, man. I had a lot of interesting experiences, but you know, you can't afford people being able to afford doing anything after 1980. No figure.
It's a different world now, right, Alex?
Yeah, education. Okay. I mean, my children went to New York City public schools in the 80s and 90s, but I took advantage of the 60s and 70s, where the school was incredible. Money was there for the, you know, and then everything went down.
Yeah.
In 1980.
Thanks to Ronnie Reagan and all the tax cuts and, you know, the supply side economics, you know. Given everything to the so-called job creators, right? Who don't create jobs, but they basically, maybe they create jobs in the Caymans and the Bahamas, but other than that, you know.
Hey, I don't know if you saw it, Rick, but a couple of moments of Shallow here. I know a lot of people are watching their brackets. Your Hawkeyes survived the first round in a squeaker.
Oh, I was cheering. They looked really bad at the end of the game, but yeah, that was a lucky circumstance there. It was a lucky miss by the Iowa player.
And how many people had Middle Tennessee in their brackets?
Oh, geez, I don't know that anybody did. I was shocked that Michigan State lost. I mean, they were like supposed to be a...
Yeah, there's a lot of brackets in the garbage out of that.
What's that?
I said, there's a lot of brackets in the garbage out of that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think... What are the odds of getting all the games right? Is it like one out of like...
Oh, it's a gajillion.
500 billion or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Something crazy like that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody's, and then, you know, who picked
Hawaii to knock off number four Cal, right?
Jeez, that was surprising too. Yeah, and VCU on Virginia Commonwealth beat who was that? Oregon State.
Yeah,
which was, I guess, maybe a minor upset.
Yeah, it's a 10-7. It's just like Temple and Iowa. You know, Temple was a 10 seed, Iowa was a 7 seed. But
yeah.
But 15 seed Middle Tennessee taking down number 2 Michigan State. You know, I'm still living for the day when a 16 seed takes down a number 1 seed.
It's never happened. I'm
it
amazed.
Has never happened, and I desperately want it to happen to Duke.
but if
the Mountaineers ever get to be a number 1 seed, it will happen to WVU.
There you go.
Because they're scaring the bejesus out of me even as we speak.
What's the score in their game, Bob?
Mountaineers, with 8 minutes to go in the first half, the Mountaineers are leading Stephen F. Austin 20-19.
Oh. Well, Stephen F. Austin's got a pretty good club. I mean, they've been in the tournament before, I know.
Well, yeah, and they play a similar pressing defense, so that was kind of that seems rather an intentional pairing.
Yeah, that could be. Well, I've become a fan of the Mountaineers. I've seen a fair number of their games because a lot of the Big 12 games are on TV, and so are the Big 10 games. I of course don't get any Pac-12 games, which is where I live. You know. We get very few Pac-12 games on DirecTV for whatever reason. There's no Pac. We don't get the Pac-12 network like, you know, other TV packages have for whatever reason. So, but that's okay. I mean, the Pac-12 is getting killed. You know, Cal lost, Oregon State lost, Arizona got beat by Wichita State, USC lost to Providence. That's four right there. I don't know if a single Pac-12 team has won a game yet. I don't think so. They had 7 teams in the tournament, and already I've counted 4 they're out. Oregon plays a team with the initials of HF? What the hell is that? Do you know who they play, Bob?
Oh, damn it. Somebody will have it.
Yeah,
Ron, that's right. Yeah, they're playing Harbor. They're playing Harbor Freight.
Is that Holy Fuck?
Harbor Freight.
I got a lot of Harbor Freight tools here.
There you go, Ron. You're back in the Hollers and Hills of West Virginia, huh?
Yes, by God, I am.
How long is that going to be for?
Until Sunday morning, about 5 or 6 dark hundred.
So you're visiting
family? Pardon me?
Are you visiting family?
Yep, visiting my sister Kelly, enjoying the good company.
You and Bob ought to go over to the Secret Sound Society maybe tonight or tomorrow.
Oh no,
night.
We had our summit meeting earlier today, Rick.
Oh, very good.
Yep.
And what decisions were made at that summit, guys?
We decided to go with the hoppiest beer that they had on tap.
Oh, I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to divide up Syria or something.
Oh no. That takes a little bit more. Takes a little bit more time, and you only do that with good liquor.
There you go.
Oh, okay. Now I understand why nobody knew who HF was. It's not HF. Marty tells me it's HC, Holy Cross.
Oh, holy shit!
Yeah.
Holy crap!
Batman.
Rick, I'll simply say that I alleviated many of Bob's oral fixations today.
What?
That sounds a little risque, man. I don't know about that. But that's okay.
One of those people.
Hook up with some cigars. Come right out and
say it. Okay. I was just going to say, if that's how you roll, that's perfectly fine with me, Ron.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you know.
Actually, they were. They. It's not how Ron rolls. It's how they were rolled. And I'm alleviating the fixation even as we speak.
Oh, the Cuban stuff. That's right. Okay. So, how many cigars have you smoked then, Bob?
In my life?
No, today and today.
This is my second.
Okay.
I'm binging a little bit.
Did Ron give you a whole box?
Very nearly.
Wow. Very cool. Well, one of these days we can probably just buy Cuban cigars at the corner store, and I'm sure the quality will go way down.
It'll probably go right
America?
Through the floor.
Yeah.
Why don't we just all go to Cuba? I'll get some rum, and you guys can go get some cigars.
There's some rum involved.
That works.
I wonder what kind of weed they have down there.
The kind that they put you under the prison for, Tim.
No.
Oh, too bad. Let's bring Dunk if they love weed over there.
See, it may be apocryphal or urban myth or whatever.
No,
but
I'm not going there.
But a long time ago, I was told what makes Cuban cigars so special is the high lithium content of the soil.
Mm.
Lithium.
Because it serves as a, it serves, as, you know, the...
It mellows you out, your
it,
mood.
It mellows you out, absolutely.
You know about that?
Yes.
Oh.
Ain't that explosive?
No, that's not, no, not dilithium crystals, Tim.
So that must explain why Ben Carson is always so mellow. He must be on lithium or something.
I'm sure he'd never smoke a cigar.
Alex, to answer your question, I'm always enjoy my short trips to West Virginia, and I'm heading back to Canada on Sunday, and on Monday I'm back on my head again because coffee breaks over.
Back on your head again? What do you mean?
You have never heard the joke, eh? Well,
hey?
Show's not long enough to tell you.
All right. You can post it or IM me.
No, just use Dr. Google and look up coffee breaks over back on your heads.
All right.
I got it.
I planted seeds. I planted seeds last week in my organic earthen bed that I prepared. I planted radishes, watermelon, cucumbers, jalapeno peppers, three kinds of tomatoes, San Marzano tomatoes, regular tomatoes, pickling cucumbers or Kirby's, and I planted, I'm going to plant Italian flat beans this weekend, cantaloupes, and I have two types of organic watermelon, and then I planted marigolds and nasturtium to grow around so that it can repel the bad...
Yeah, keep the bugs out.
So I'm doing it here for my very first time, the right way, the right dates, and condition the soil, and I'm doing it, and hopefully I'll get a very good bounty of goodies. Which is fun.
I'm tilling the ground. I till my second tilling of the ground out here for the tomatoes today.
Yeah, it takes a few seasons.
I couldn't till the second time for the rain came, so I'm still working old leaf mulch and stuff into the soil.
You know, Dunk, the soil here is so bad. It's like sludge, like clay. So I had to remove most of it from this area I have. And I had to put in five ingredients. I had to put vermiculite, as much organic as I could. Vermiculite, compost, peat moss, mulch, and earth. And I had to mix that all in, all the way down, and rake it and condition it for months. And then again, I had to till it before I planted the seeds. So this is my first planting, so we'll see how everything works. But it took so much stuff and so much work to condition the earth here.
Alex, you're growing nasturtiums?
Nasturtiums and marigolds, yeah.
Well, you know what? With the good thing about nasturtiums is that you can eat it too.
Yeah, someone told me you could throw them in salad, huh, Tim?
Yeah, the flowers and the stems. I do that. We grow that at our church. And I'll pick like a flower or two and I'll start eating it.
Oh, wow.
It's good. It's
I'm
going
to can't wait to do that.
A little spicy, but it's really good.
Oh, I love a squash blossom quesadilla.
Ooh.
Well, those are good, great for quesadillas, by the way, nasturtiums.
I have a quesadilla cookbook that has all quesadilla recipes in it of all different kinds. It's great.
I love quesadillas with pastrami and lettuce.
You can make one with lox, cream cheese, capers, and cheese. Mmm.
One with pastrami dripping with fat and oil.
Yum. What is the machine noise back there? Do you hear that? Huh.
I wonder who's...
Not me.
Someone's doing their spring cleaning. Sounds like a vacuum sound or something.
We don't have spring anymore. So I guess
I think it's coming from Bob once in a while.
I think spring has been abolished by the Republicans. I think Senator Snowball caused that to happen.
Yeah. Well, hold your horses. We get snow over the weekend here, so yeah.
No, here. We don't have rain. It's just like by the way, Bob,
go ahead.
Oh, did you hear that Anonymous is getting the speech that Hillary Clinton made at Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, I saw where you sent that along to me, Tim. And you know, there's one of the things that the Hilarians have been saying. Well, it's not secret anyway. I mean, you can go watch it on YouTube. Only thing is, it's not the same thing. There's a speech that she made at some Clinton Foundation symposium for women and girls. And they're saying, see, it's innocuous. It wasn't secret. Only that's not it. There were three speeches for a total of $675,000. That she made for Goldman Sachs, but all told, I think her speech income was something like $21 million. So a lot more than any three speeches.
How can anyone? I'm following the nurses on the bus. You know, the nurses that are going all over the country for Bernie, nurses on the bus, and there are nurses that are saying, "I'm not." Don't include me in voting for Bernie, you know. And my feeling is this. You should give up your license to practice any health care or helping profession if you back anybody other than Bernie Sanders at this point. That's my feeling right now. And anybody that wants to use the term liberal or progressive to describe themselves should cease and desist using those terms if they're backing anybody but Bernie, and that's how I feel right now.
Hey, I've got something for show and tell.
Yeah?
That I got yesterday in the mail. Somehow, the Hillary Victory Fund got my name. And I think it's come from Obama, because way back in 2008, I donated $100 to Obama, so I can't take any other way, because my wife didn't get a mailer, just me. Anyway, there was a business reply envelope in there. They're looking for donations. And it says, no post is necessary, you know, if mail in the United States. But across the top, there's an arrow that says, by using your own first class stamp to return this envelope, you will save us much needed funds.
Well, you should do smart.
It's Bob. It's got to be Bob.
It's probably the fan to the computer.
Oh.
What you should do, Sparky, is send that envelope back empty, so the Hillary campaign has to pay for the postage.
Well,
Bernie card.
There's a part where you can, you know, the checkup box. It has a smiling Hillary on it. And what? It has my name. And it says, are you with me? And you check the box. Yes, Hillary, I know defeating the Republicans won't be easy. And that why I got my, but got your back in this mm-hmm. fight to make America everyone, to help you win your battles in the states, oh, earning the Democratic nomination, build strong Democratic caucuses, Democratic campaigns across the country. I'm enclosing my most generous contribution in the amount of, and you can click off the boxes. And under other, I'm going to put never ever.
That's funny. You know, yeah, she's only...
And then it's got a... You can send a personal message to Hillary for him, too.
Ooh,
what issues matter? What issues matter most to you and your family? So I'm going to write some stuff in there, and then I'm going to also enclose... I had a Bernie stick, so I made a copy of it, so I'm going to cut it down and put Bernie stickers in there.
Good going.
and mail it back.
That's funny.
Did you see that the story I posted last week that I was putting out of the store?
Letter with it too.
I bumped into that woman who was wearing a big Bernie button, and I went right over to her and went, you know, when you see somebody like that's from your persuasion there, you know, in a land of, you know, here where I live, I mean, I just went right over to her and said, hey, and we sort of, you know, bonded immediately. And it turned out that she was a transsexual, you know, and she even said, you could tell, can't you? And I said, yeah. And I didn't say anything to her. She just said, you could tell, can't you? I said, yeah, but who cares? I said, so we started talking about everything, you know, that we talk about when progressive people get together in the midst of this horror. And then she kind of flirted with me and wanted to see me again.
What was your response to that, Alex?
I said, I'm sorry, I'm married, but I was very flattered. And then when I walked away after saying goodbye, I walked away to the parking lot towards my car, and I spotted a car with a bumper sticker that said, Cruz Palin 2016. I almost dropped to my knees in disgust.
Oh, God.
What a day that
was. God. Yeah. Cruz Palin? Well, I don't think that's going to happen because Palin's already endorsed Trump.
Can you believe that?
Wow. Well, there you go. What? Quite a contrast there, huh?
Interesting 15-minute blip in my day.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that Arizona, for you, it's sort of like, it's kind of a desert of politics, let's just call it there. At least a desert of progressive politics. Although, you know, there's some thought that not too many election cycles down the road, you know, Arizona could be turned blue just like, you know, neighboring New Mexico has, as long as, you know, the Hispanics start to turn out to vote more. And same thing with Texas, you know? They could turn blue in a few cycles.
You know,
not in the area that Alex
lives. Dunk knows. But, you know, there I have connected.
Yeah, my sister lives there.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, sis. But there is online, there's Free Thought Arizona, and there's the Humanist Society of Arizona, and there's also the Secular Arizona, they're the ones that are fighting to get that prayer out of the state house, you know, that big controversy with the Satanists because they didn't want to have prayer, you know, that whole thing that happened recently. And then there's a few like Raul Gravia, and there's a couple of progressive politicians here. So there's a few people here and there that I've found here, but it is very, very staunchly conservative, of course.
So have you met any Satanists there, Alex, or not?
No, I have not. I probably scare them.
There you go. You probably get in their craw about, you know, believing in a religion, right?
Okay. By the way, just as we approach the top of the second hour of the program, we finish the second hour of the program, just that usual gentle reminder that we try to raise $200 every evening, and we are at zero. So that having been said,
uh-oh.
Carry on.
And And Bob has a massive amount of bills to pay.
Bob does.
Yeah, even
the horn does.
Even who will not be spoken about.
I'm pledging right now that on my next paycheck, I'm going to go to the bank and get a money order and send it to the cavernous spider den.
The echo chamber.
Yeah, I pledge.
Thank you,
Surrounded Alex. By white hoods, right? It's the mailbox that has the white hoods nearby, right, Bob?
I still want to, yeah, and I still want to figure out, it'd be nice if we could put together, you reckon Anonymous could figure out who's got PMB 181?
Hell yeah.
You sure it's not PMB 666?
No, it's 181. They put it on their little pieces of paper that they drop in the bags of white rice that they leave on people's porch. And now, one of my buddies over there tells me that they're putting out recruiting information in Beckley.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. That's right, Ron. Talk ain't cheap.
Do you think they're being that bold now because the climate is aiding and abetting people at this time for people to feel comfortable enough to?
Oh yeah, Trump has created fertile ground for them.
Yeah. Oh God. The next 10 years, man. I'm thinking we're going to see some exponential stuff going down. I'm kind of worried about the about everything here.
Well, I don't know, Alex. I've been trying to sort of examine things in a different direction lately, and toward that end, one of the things that occurs to, well, I'm not so worried about some monumental collapse. I'm worried about the long, slow slide toward an ignominious end. You know, because that's the kind of stuff that nobody ever thinks about stopping. So imagine President Trump, okay? Yeah. There's going to be a whole bunch of Republicans that aren't going to cooperate with him, at least not at first. That's why I say that a President Cruz is a far more dangerous proposition for progressive people.
You're right.
Because a Republican House and a Republican Congress will do anything that he wants.
Mm-hmm. And that religiosity factor on top of it, which Trump doesn't have, you know, that whole craziness there just makes it even worse. Well, when I say the next 10 years, I'm saying, you know, I don't think that there's going to be one giant thing, but I can see, I'm sort of foreseeing in the next few years, there's going to be more and more stuff, you know, more violence, more racism, like more of the same, just continuing and getting worse and worse and worse until we get to that end. You know, do you think this is crazy? But, you know, do you think that if Trump, you know, my feeling is if Trump gets elected and things get bad and let's say Social Security is threatened and just everything is threatened for us. I can go to Israel, even though I'm not Jewish. I am. And I wouldn't want to pick Israel as the only place to go, but they'll accept me automatically. But at least, you know, I can get free health care and not have to worry about, you know, living
yeah,
in the
free
streets.
Free health care that America's been paying for, you know.
I know all that, Bob.
I was just pointing.
I'm just like thinking, like, do I want to stay here as a 70 year old, or I want, what's, you know, under those circumstances, or 75 year old, or, you know, I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking about that stuff.
I just wanted to cool it with the Social Security stuff. Everybody knows I'm going on Medicare in November.
You old enough for that?
Yes.
Oh, wow. When's your birthday? And,
1951.
No, November what?
October.
October. Okay. So you're going to be on Medicare. I found out. Well, you still have to pay.
I might not get it till December, but I'll have to sign up for it. But before my birthday.
It still sucks because they don't cover any dental care, which is really horrible. You know, it's
yeah, but with my wife and her supplemental, I mean, she's had two cataract surgeries, and our out of pocket's been next to nothing.
Well, lucky you. Yeah.
And she said a couple trips to the emergency room. They didn't bankrupt us. So something's going right. And I mean, my parents, I mean, their last few years, I mean, their medical costs were astronomical. And it didn't bankrupt them.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess every situation's different because my mother is just on Social Security. She has no assets. Her husband is also on Social Security, and she's had a lot of dental stuff over the past few years that they have had no coverage for at all. And so she has problems as a result of that. So, you know, I don't understand why they don't cover the mouth. That's put in a different category. To me, I just don't get it, you know.
Well, my mom and dad had a union health retiree plan through the pile drivers, which helped them immensely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm told we may be hearing from the Angry Indian in a bit.
Oh, goody.
He has to contact me.
He
Who
did.
Just came? Charles?
Oh, I'm Charles. Tried to ring me. I brought him in.
Hi there.
Let me look.
Yeah, he just told me I messaged Sparky.
Okay.
How come nobody besides Asians noticed that Canada's converting their biggest coal power plant to solar?
I noticed that. And it's kind of humongous, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah, they put out, it was the biggest single coal plant in Canada, the largest emitter in Canada. They shut it down 2 years ago. And now, last year, we had...
I can't hear you very well. Uh-oh.
In 2014, we had 50-some-odd smog days in Ontario. Last year, none. And they're converting it to solar. It's going to put out 1 to 1.5% of what the old plant put out, but it's a positive contribution.
No, they're taking it seriously.
Plant they're going to build?
Pardon me?
Do you know what kind of solar plant they're going to build?
No, all I know, based on the news, was 44 megawatts.
Okay. Well, that hum is driving me nuts.
Well, I'm sorry. I can't do anything about it. It's the fans on the computer.
Oh. Mm.
Did you hear recently there were a bunch of Americans that met with Trudeau and they dropped to their knees? Remember that a few days ago, you guys? They dropped, like, saying, oh, I wish we had somebody like you, or they were, like, dropping to their knees in front of him.
Yeah. Could you run for president? Yes.
Yeah.
I think Sophie was probably jealous. That's his wife. in any event, they are a breath of fresh air in Canada. Nice to have them. It's like having our own Kennedys again.
Oh, they're young. They're young and attractive. And, you know, they're not right-wing pieces of shit.
No, and they're bilingual. They speak another language.
And he cries. He cries. Justin Trudeau, he had tears flow when he talks about the you know, people's struggles. He actually cries.
And it won't get any press down here, but by the end of February, we had brought in the 25,000 Syrians that we promised we would bring in. They're all in the process of being settled. And in searches through their baggage, we didn't find a single sword.
Not a one?
Not a one.
No ass guy?
No.
Not even a straight razor?
No. Just kids looking for school and dental care and all the things you look for when you've been in a refugee camp for 2 or 3 years.
Jesus.
Can I interrupt for a minute? Jenny and Angry, you have to update your Skype before I can add you to the group. It's telling me that you have to update.
Yeah, because what, an update came through in the last week or so?
Yeah, we experienced this problem last Friday night. I was unable to add people because they hadn't updated, and Grant was left out in left field because they couldn't find an update for Linux.
Well, that's really going to piss Angry off.
Well, I trust he's hearing you. By the way, I got a really nice note from our buddy Steve in China. The subject line was policide, policide. And Steve says, "We've reached something like the utter depression of our political life. What fascinates me is the obvious decline of a serious exercise in representative democracy to the leveling of an enormous number of people awash in the trash and trivia that passes for a regular and legitimate transfer of power. The Kennedy years, I suspect, gave us an instance of the first presidency that was a product, a true production of the camera, the television image itself. Kennedy was so naturally beautiful on the TV screen, so eloquently charismatic, it was impossible for the camera not to become something like a voyeur. And peeking through the same keyhole, we learned to identify with the new passive experience of recreating government, of watching it at work and play. Ronald Reagan then brought us the spectacle of president as movie idol, the politician, or I would say B-movie actor, the politician who transitions as easily from his old role of being a character into the equally rehearsed one of being an actual president, who just happens to charm us with his ready wit, his slightly hammed up acting. You can hardly tell the difference sometime. Near the end, even Reagan couldn't tell. Finally, with the Clinton show, we get the slick, seamless intrigue and sitcom of the American presidency as cheap soap opera, Southern Gothic, no less, and oh so tacky. Now, the end point. Trump. A man whose every word, slur, jibe, or puke is sedulously, lovingly, longingly followed, recorded, reordered, stroked, bleated, and bragged like the very pile and heap of shit and shit mound of purest shit that it always was, is meant to be, or can ever be, for all time. Except that, if the camera and the clueless core of minion keepers who aim it straight away didn't follow this freakish excuse of a human being around, didn't stick the silent, intruding eye into his mewling, puckered, blotchy face every day, if they had the common sense to spare us yet another gaze into and onto the speckled egg of sloppy makeup and bad skin and hair and filth and self-hatred of this miserable punk, well, perhaps we could just get on with the necessary, the desperate, real work of saving our nation. In 24 hours, we know the asshat would just fade into the blue mist of vidiocy that he so obviously is a creation of. In 48 hours, there would be little remaining but the echo and rumor of a sideshow freak pretending to be the candidate, pretending to be the president, pretending to be a man. But this, the mirage and not the substance, is where we are. The flavor of the day. the latest installment in the series. I'm sure the bastard shall go by the wayside, but where, then, are we? Fascism? Did I hear someone squeak about fascism? Come now, little child, that one comes dressed in many distressing colors. Regards, Steve in China. That's one to chew on for a little bit. And I think there's a lot of truth in it. Well, I mean, it's a at this point in time, it's the reductio ad absurdum of American politics to reality show.
Can I give that one a cowbell?
Absolutely. I think it's warranted.
What happened, Bob?
Yeah, what was that?
What happened to the cowbell I gave you?
Oh, it's here. It's here. We went rearranging a whole bunch of everything here. And so it is it's packed away pending getting the moving around and rearranging finished off.
Okay.
In Canada, is there as much right wing, I don't know what you want to call them, hotheads or whatever, as we have down here in the United States? Canada is pretty much more.
No, we've got a few right wingers, but they tend to fall more into the category of, you know, the old traditional Republican Party. I mean, we had a government we got rid of recently that would have been regarded as sort of Clinton Democrat, and Canadians got rid of them because they were too far to the right. It was more cut taxes for business, cut back money for healthcare, education, etc. 100% support for Israel. There's no other solution in the Middle East, etc. And they got turfed out. So it's back to more traditional Canadian politics, which is somewhat to the left of what everyone fondly remembers as being the Democratic Party down here.
Yeah. I can't understand. Why, I'm sorry.
We've got our health care. We've got our cheap tuition in universities. In Ontario, essentially university tuition is going to be free going forward. We're moving into solar power and wind power and cutting down the coal plants. You know, all the basic progressive stuff is just quietly happening up there.
Well, yeah, I can't understand in the Middle East why people just, you know, we're all humans, just the Arabs and the Israelis. I can't understand why they just can't bury their differences and live in peace.
Sort of Hatfield and McCoy's. I mean, this goes back.
Yeah.
But in Palestine, you have now, you're well into your third generation of what are essentially refugees who've lived inside a fence. You may well be coming up on your fourth generation, and it becomes part of your entire cultural upbringing that I'm going through all of this because of the Israelis. The Israelis, on the other hand, with ample evidence, know that if they relax at all, somebody's going to be beating down their door trying to kill their ass or annihilate them off the face of the earth. So it's really hard in that environment to find some middle road where people can live together.
Yeah.
Well, in the U.S., the best example I can think of that's equivalent to what's going on between Israel and the Arab states is technically the South lost the first round of the Civil War. They're well on their way to winning the second round. It's only taken them 120 years.
I differ a little bit. I think this is round 3, maybe round 4.
They haven't given up is the point.
Well, no. But they, you know, round one was the Civil War itself. Round two was the terrorist insurgency against Reconstruction. Round three was the terrorist insurgency against the civil rights movement of the mid-20th century. And this is round four.
And they don't go away.
Well, no, they don't look. They're, I know it's entirely too easy, and too simplistic an analysis, but it has some value. They're Scots Irish.
Well, yeah, all the way down through Texas. That was the roots of it.
Yeah.
And we've still got the counterparts up in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, that. Even to this day, the federal government in Canada is really nervous about trying to ram anything down their throats because they just won't put up with it. And, you know, we built a country around that philosophy. I'm just wondering, you know, what's it going to take to, you know, end round four? And I'm hoping that, you know, maybe the decimation of the Republican Party in the next couple of elections might be a start. There. Now you know my political.
Well, sometimes the patient just ain't gonna make it, Ron.
So, are you suggesting we build a wall around the old Mason-Dixon line and just wall them in and check back in about 30 years to see what happened?
You know, I go back and forth on that. Because on the one hand, you know, if you look at, for instance, how many people in the United States have graduated from land-grant universities? Well, those were made possible by the Morrill Act of 1862, not M-O-R-A-L or M-O-R-A-L-E, but the M-O-R-R-I-L-L Act. And it provided for the creation of land-grant universities. Of which I'm a graduate. And the thing is, it had been introduced in the Congress before the Civil War, Ron, and the southern states had kept it from passing the Congress. Only with the patricians and the oligarchs of the Old South gone were we able to create that tremendous public good. So, you know, I acknowledge that the South has been and probably always will be the millstone around any around the neck of any progress that we may make in this country. But we are both to one extent or another Southerners. You and I, Ron.
I would also point out that the South is. Ever.
Having some break up there, Ron. You want to do that again?
Well, the South has also given rise to some great intellectuals and some great authors because we know how to describe our misery or our perceived
without a doubt.
Misery.
Great minds indeed, great artists, a tremendous food culture. But by the same token, a lot of people who were great Southerners, or a lot of people who became great, did so after they left the South. You know, Helen Keller, as brilliant as and she, you know, she is still underappreciated for her brilliance. Only achieved her brilliance when she got out of Alabama. The same thing applies to W.C. Handy, you know, father of the blues.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who, you know, the South has produced a lot of great people who became great upon leaving the South. Now, Faulkner never did. Eudora Welty never did. Who wrote A Good Man is Hard to Find? Flannery O'Connor never did. But,
and Troy.
I'm sorry?
Ty Conroy.
Well, yeah, recently deceased. But something's got to be done.
I've never been able to reconcile the gentility that I've encountered so often in the South with the rabid views against other people, against the North, and against, you're not one of them, are you? That whole philosophy, I've never understood quite where that came from.
It's insularity. It's a function of the rural nature. Jefferson and Madison favored a rural agrarian South and were constantly mistrustful of the industrious business commerce driven North. You know, that goes back to the 18th century. That's not something that just cropped up mid-century in the 19th. There's the clannishness that goes back to the Scots-Irish stuff.
Like this, maybe it goes back to Jefferson's time, but the South was never really successful in establishing an industrial base over and above anything relating to textiles that I'm aware of anywhere along the way, and they still have it.
Oh, contraire mi amigo.
You got some stuff going on in Alabama related to NASA. But in terms of high tech, the automotive industry that's moving in to Tennessee, Kentucky, etc., are doing so primarily because I think they're right to work states.
Well, yeah, that's about cheap labor. And Google's putting in a huge installation in Huntsville, Alabama, which has become a bit of a sort of a corn-pone Silicon Valley. I mean, where I grew up in Alabama began to thrive specifically because the TVA came into existence and cheap electricity was available. So along comes Ford, Reynolds Metals Company, Diamond Shamrock, Union Carbide, on and on and on and on, and put that entire region to work. And in fact, brought in people like, you know, my dad, who left a job at Alloy here, Union Carbide's Alloy installation, to go and work for Reynolds in Northwest Alabama. But the steel industry that developed in Birmingham, and you know, it only died because the whole steel industry in the United States died. Look at the chemical industry along the Gulf Coast that has absolutely toxified the beautiful estuarial environment of places like Louisiana and Southeast Texas.
Bob, Louisiana is sportsman's paradise.
Yeah, well,
it says that on their license plates.
And miraculously, some of it has still managed somehow or another to survive. I don't know, but
there's also the fact. I remember my grandfather. We had a radio. We didn't listen to it all that much, but somehow or other, from the various people he had been talking to over the years, he referred to Roosevelt as old Snaggletooth. I don't know why. And the worst thing he did was to build all them dams down in Tennessee and flood out all those good people from the farms they'd lived on for generations.
And he built one in California, too.
And yet, oddly enough, the Tennessee Valley Authority, which lifted the whole region out of poverty, was the brainchild of a senator from Nebraska, a Republican senator from Nebraska.
Who was that?
His name was Norris.
Oh.
We have the Central Valley Authority up here with Shasta Dam.
Is that the last Republican that had a... had a good idea, Bob, or not? That guy from Nebraska? Senator Norris?
May very well have been indeed. Hey, we got about 32 minutes left in the program, and I wanted to make sure and send thanks out to Trey. Trey's the only one who's jumped in on fundraising for this evening. Thank you very kindly, Trey. And that leaves us with $175 to go on the night, and we really appreciate your help. help, Trey, and hope you get some camaraderie somewhere along the way here.
Oh, Bob, you don't have to worry about hitting your marks tonight. Malloy's the best of.
Well, yeah, but I do. I'm still going to get out of here at 9, though, because I got a note from Gerald calling a meeting of the Hillbilly Horn Society at Secret Sandwich this evening about 9:30.
Oh, he's going to be there?
Yeah.
Cool.
So we're gonna have an ice cold beer and a Sammy.
So that's your second. That'll be your second foray to the Secret Sandwich Society, Bobby.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. No. Ron and I did not meet at the Secret.
Oh, you didn't? No, okay.
No. We
met at the Secret place.
Yeah, the double Secret place.
Undisclosed location.
Yeah, Cheney's Bunker.
It was one of those places where you can do a transaction in the parking lot without thinking it might be on camera.
Cuban cigars monitored that much in the United States?
Hell yeah.
Yes, and especially if they've got an associated bottle of Cuban rum.
Yeah, añejo.
Yeah, which is decent stuff.
Ain't shabby.
Yeah, unfortunately, Americans are not able to buy it yet.
So
if you like it,
could you have been tagged as a smuggler?
Yes. I'm living right out there on the edge, Sparky, but I'm doing it for Bob.
Well, I guess that's sort of like Carol that occasionally joins Bob for a smoke on the edge of the porch there.
Out on the ledge?
On the ledge, yeah.
Well, I must make an admission that we still have some of that stuff that Colorado is now famous for. We cross state lines and we've been utilizing it for about 8 months.
For medicinal purposes.
Yeah. For medicinal purposes only.
You can do that, Alex. Aren't you subject to testing and so forth?
Oh, I didn't say anything about that, Rick. All I said was that I transported a certain thing from one state to another.
That's right. Okay.
And that's.
No consumption involved, of course.
I'm not gonna say what I do or what I don't.
You refuse to either confirm or deny. That's standard.
Yeah, that means I confirm.
Yeah, right. That's called the Walmart response.
I can confirm that down here toward the nub end of this particular corona, I'm feeling real mellow. I'm just absolutely. Sure. I'm just chill.
How are your Mountaineers doing?
Oh, let's check in on the Mountaineers. Hold on.
While you're doing that, Bob, I'll pass on a quick story.
Oh, hell, it's halftime, and Stephen F. Austin's up 31-28.
Ah.
Mm. Oy. Go ahead, Ron.
From my son who is moving to California in May. Nice big promotion. 50% bump in salary, et cetera, et cetera. Going to be living on somewhere close to the beach in Oceanside, California.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's North San Diego County.
Calls me up, freaked right out. And I said, so what's the problem? He said, they just told me I've got to do a drug test. I said, yeah? He said, if I'd known there was a drug test involved, I wouldn't have toked up last weekend. I said, but how long have you got before the test? He said, 3 weeks. I said, you should be okay. I said, you need to understand they're going to be looking for coke, meth, heroin, etc. A little bit of weed in California is not going to cost you a job, but the company's spending $25,000 to move you down there and get you ensconced. And he said, isn't that an invasion of privacy?
Said, not in America.
Not in Canada. Employers are entitled to give you a drug test. He said, All I'm doing is using the computer. I'm not driving heavy equipment. I said, yeah, I understand. But get in, stay clean for a little while, as much as you enjoy it, and get established.
And then never give them probable cause.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but, it's the land of the free and home of the brave, huh, Ron? Welcome to America.
Yeah.
He was just freaked right out at the
idea. You know, you could tell him, Ron, tell him from now until then to drink a lot of water, make sure his body is well hydrated.
He does.
And also, if you do some research, there's some natural things that kind of help flush out stuff. But you know what? For a man, because he doesn't have as much adipose tissue as a woman, because that's where that stuff sort of stays in a long period of time, that's in his favor. Also, 3 weeks, you know, is a long period of time. And also, it depends on how much he consumed is a big thing and how often. So if he does it occasionally, that's in his favor. And if he didn't do a lot of it, that's also in his favor.
He's about somewhere between 10 to 11% body fat, 6'5". There's no fat I can see on him anywhere.
And how often does he use and how much?
Maybe on weekends, every other weekend.
Well, he'll be fine. He'll be fine, it sounds like.
I also told him to steer clear of poppy seed.
Them old poppy seeds.
Old poppy seed muffins.
He's always drinking water. So,
once
he's got the job, is he subject to random drug tests?
If he's not in a union, see, when you're in a union, you can still be subject, but they have to have cause. If you're not in a union, they might have their own thing, protocol, if we could do it whenever we want and not have probable cause. I mean, sometimes that's true. So
he's going to be the design director for an architectural lighting firm, and everybody in the company views him as a saint because everything he's touched so far has turned to gold. So
that's good.
I didn't tell him this, but I said, I think you'll be all right in California if they pick up the occasional trace of marijuana.
But we had in our union, I don't know if it still applies, but as long as you pass a drug test, you get a $50 check from the LMCC, Labor Management Committee,
for taking a drug test,
and then you were subject to it, but it very to random, but it very seldom happened in any company. Most of the time, if you changed jobs and you went to a new job site, with you know a big job like a power plant job or something like that, you'd have to pass a drug test to get hired.
Yeah, this whole marijuana thing is so stupid. I mean, people drink themselves into oblivion and wreak havoc on the world and smoke tobacco, which is bad for your health, but you know, and that's fine. But this marijuana deal, I don't know what's the whole thing of why you think that marijuana is considered so horrible by the our government. What is it about the...
Well, it's still listed as a class one.
It's the blacks.
Why?
It's because the blacks use it. It's the drug of choice for the blacks and the jazz people and so forth. That's why.
Yeah, haven't you seen that scene from The Godfather?
Which one?
Where they discuss the families getting into the drug trade.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
I don't know. Like, my understanding of why marijuana is so demonized is because Hearst decided that, because all books were published in hemp, and Hearst could make more money if it was on wood pulp, so they demonized marijuana as this drug, like reefer madness and stuff. So that's why the whole thing for marijuana just like went mental.
Actually, Jenny, that story, it goes back to the 20s and 30s, and maybe Hearst was involved, but all of this is probably apocryphal, unless it can be proven definitively. But it was the Rockefellers and the Standard Oil. corporation that had all these new uses for hydrocarbons. And whereas hemp could be used for paper, for clothing, for rope, for blah 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 blah, blah. Well, that was getting in the way of the development of rayon and nylon and all of that stuff that we wear now.
Hmm. And I didn't know that women process marijuana. I don't know what Alex said, but women, if I go for a job that has a drug testing, marijuana would stay in my body longer than a man. I mean, that sounds like something we would, somebody needs to take to the Supreme Court or something, because that's horrible.
We have more fat in our bodies as females generally, and because the molecules in the marijuana love to be in the fat cells. So because we generally have more of them, women are more, are going to hold on to that THC more than men generally.
Doesn't that sound horrible?
Yeah.
If I could add one thing, my son lives in Montreal, in Canada, where for the last 3-4 years, even with a conservative government in place, the police force generally decided across the country, we have better things to do than to pick on somebody who's toking up. So if you are, technically at the moment it's against the law, I see people smoking on the street all the time, and if you are accosted, first thing the cop is going to say to you is, so how much do you have on you? And if it's an ounce and a half, you're fine. If it's a whole bag, maybe they'll call you in and you get charged with a misdemeanor. But they're not filling up the prison for marijuana offenses right now. They've been having it for a long time. So he's in an environment where it's more difficult for him to get alcohol than it is to find marijuana. It's easier to consume and much less expense, frankly, than going to a bar. And now he's moving to California, where apparently it's against the law.
Plus, isn't California where they grow the most and the best of that stuff?
No, most of it's grown, most and best seems to be grown in B.C.
Well, as far as the United States, though, isn't California the number one crop there or something, or the number three?
I think it is. Humboldt, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Humboldt County, yeah.
Yeah,
but BC,
and there's a few other places like Trinity County, Modoc County.
Right.
Lansing County. It's grown all over the place.
Yeah, the low population ones, like I guess we'll call them the Deliverance Counties of California. The state of Jefferson Counties, right?
What is the penalty for having 2 quart jars of Girl Scout cookie buds?
Ooh, Girl Scout cookies. I have something called...
These are buds, not cookies.
Oh, buds. Do you know what I got?
They're called Girl Scout cookie.
Obama Kush I got in...
Look, Google it.
Cool. What's it called?
Girl Scout cookies.
Girl Scout cookie weed. Just go do that.
Yeah, I have Obama Kush and also Kosher Kush.
That's pretty much buds for all this.
You know what? The big one's going to be next year is Rainbow Bud.
Really?
Google that and look at the picture.
I had L.A. Woman, too, at one time.
Oh, the crossbreeding and the genetic modification of cannabis is getting huge.
Mm-hmm.
Huge! Huge!
Wow.
We have to do that once a program. Huge.
Huge.
I did the L.A. Woman thing once, but it didn't work out.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Ha ha.
Just a quick update. My Mountaineers are falling apart like a house of cards.
I saw they were down by 10.
Yeah, 38-28.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
38-30.
Oh, those are the first points of the second half. They had 28 at halftime, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, well.
Oh, good. We won't have to talk about them again till next year.
No. August will be here before you know it, and I'll be suffering with the football team.
There you go. Yeah. It looks like the Chiefs heads are beating Pittsburgh by a point.
Well, and Oregon looks like it's handling Holy Cross, so you should be okay.
Yeah.
And that's a number one versus a number 16 anyway, so you're safe.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm looking at these pictures of the Rainbow Kush. That looks really colorful. Jeez. It has a pine taste, I guess, and an amazing smell.
I won't know till next year.
Developed by experienced Dutch growers of Amsterdam marijuana seeds.
Well, isn't that pretty?
Dunk, you know that app, right? Not Weed Maps, but the other, there's an app, I forgot the name of that app, which goes into all the kinds and describes them, and I forgot the name. Well, Weed Maps is good, too, but...
Oh, well, you know... But it probably all still smells like a coffee drinking skunk.
Exactly.
Ollie has a link to the San Francisco marijuana paper. I'll put it in Skype chat. If I have it on this computer.
Yeah, you know your son could always get a prescription once he gets to California, Ron.
Yeah.
getting a medical marijuana card in California is really easy.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is, the problem
doctor, it hates when I do this. We'll smoke that.
Even though medical marijuana is legal in California, employers still have a right to fire you if you use it. I think the California Supreme Court has decided that.
So what the hell is that all about then?
Well, it's capitalism, Alex. Employers can decide to do that if they want, you know?
And they could probably, because they can probably do the same thing with opiates. Yeah, I don't care if you've got persistent pain and you've got a prescription. You're canned. Merca.
Right. Now, if marijuana gets legalized, which I'm pretty sure it will after the election this November in California... then I don't know that employers will be able to do that in California. Obviously, the federal government will because they're not bound by California law. But I'm not so sure.
Well, the problem there, Rick, is and this is the constant problem with cannabis, is determining what constitutes being under the influence of it. I mean, alcohol is legal, but if you show up to work drunk. They can can your ass.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem with cannabis is that, you can smoke it on Saturday the 1st, and it's still in your system on, the 31st, even though you haven't touched it, the 28th, even though you haven't touched it since.
Yeah.
And so any content in the blood, breath, or urine is deemed to be effective. Unlike alcohol, which dissipates and can't be measured after a while, it's because it's illegal, they've had no incentive to try to figure out a better way to test for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I would think that a creative lawyer could do a lot, with people who are charged for DUI who allegedly are under the influence of marijuana just because it's so difficult to quantify, like, what is, intoxicated because they haven't come up with the, necessary tests for determining that,
Well, all I'll say is that my son is coming from an environment where, one, he voted for the current government. The current government has said during the campaign... before the election and reiterated after the election that one of their prime objectives is to A, completely decriminalize marijuana,
and B, before their term is over, to legalize marijuana at the federal level. And
I want to go to Canada.
And he's moving to California.
As Led Zeppelin once said, with an aching in his heart.
Yeah, there you go.
But, you know, he's 6'5", reasonably good looking, really fit, really likes the ladies, going to be living on the beach in Oceanside. I think he'll find ways to deal with his depression.
Yeah.
And our next governor is going to be Gavin Newsom, so everything is cool.
Yeah, he's actually more of a true liberal than Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown sort of, you know, goes sideways periodically.
You know, Newsom's ex-wife is a right-wing Fox News talking head.
Yeah, she's got a face that looks like it was manufactured from a mold or something like that, you know? Said a lot of work done.
His first wife is one of those, but she's a brunette, people. She's a Fox News, but she's a right-wing crazed person, and that's Newsom's ex-wife. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what can she do now? I'm sure the divorce has been long ago settled.
Well, he got remarried to this gorgeous model, blonde woman, and had the baby with her. Why do I know this?
I've long thought that Gavin Newsom had some. He kind of had a presidential look about him.
He does, even more so than Vince Romney. Mitt Romney,
But he wants to be. Add to his resume, Bob. He wants to be governor of California.
Well,
he's going to get it.
Get the experience as a governor and then try to run for president. I mean, you know, it's a great state to be from to run for president. You basically are assured those electoral votes unless your last name is Rubato.
I mean, look at his resume when and if he decides to run for president. Mayor of San Francisco, lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
Governor of California.
That's like
having been mayor of a city, and then member of Congress, and then a United States senator.
Wow!
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, and by the way, let's just as we head toward the end of the program, let's just sort of for the sake of people's. Just, you know, building people up. It ain't over. Not by a long shot. And Bernie isn't quitting, and I ain't quitting on Bernie.
Me either.
And I don't care how many Hilarians tell me to knuckle under and suck it up.
Mm.
I'm voting for Bernie. I don't get, you know, California doesn't get to vote till June. I don't get to vote till May. I am voting for Bernie.
Yeah,
and I got that email today about Hillary Clinton doing fundraisers in Virginia and Tennessee that had already voted. Bernie's doing town halls.
In Arizona.
In Arizona, yeah. I'm sure everybody got it.
Yeah, I got that too. Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I mean, the whole, you know, if you look at the Hilarians, there's only, Hillary has had like 700,000 individual contributions. Bernie has had like 5 million or something like that. You know, I mean, no comparison, you know?
Yeah, and if she's the nominee and she wants to win in November, she's going to have to make some happy noises toward the burners.
Yeah, she certainly is.
There are going to have to be some concessions made.
What I read today, that she's not going to do any events in Utah, but Bernie is?
Well, maybe Bernie can get like, you know, Bernie's problem is he's been close in about half the states, and the other half of the states he's gotten blown out. He needs some blowouts against Hillary. The only states he's blown Hillary out in were, you know, near his home turf, New Hampshire and Vermont.
He blew her out in Colorado and Minnesota.
What was the vote there?
20 points.
Oh, was it 20? Okay, well, that's a blowout then, yeah. I guess 20 points or more is what he needs to do on a sustained basis in a number of states.
I did read somewhere that a memo has gone out in the Hillary camp saying don't be surprised if we lose every state on Tuesday.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Wow.
Well, let's hope she loses big, because that's, you know, all the delegates are awarded on a proportional representation basis. So, I don't even look at the superdelegate nonsense, even though CNN always puts it in their, you know, delegate counts. But, I mean, Bernie's about 320 delegates behind. He lost roughly 100 delegates in the last set of primaries on this past Tuesday. So he was like 220.
Yeah, but the closest
down.
Thing for Hillary to a big win was Ohio. And that wasn't a knockout blow by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, Florida was pretty one-sided, though. Well,
so I don't count the Confederacy.
Yeah.
Well, but Florida's a state, though, the Democrats can actually win, though, Bob.
Well, it is, but it's still the Confederacy. And the Democrats vote like Confederate Democrats.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and I really, and I guess it won't happen. But if the Democratic Party was serious about its future, front loading the Confederacy in the primaries is about the stupidest thing they can possibly do, except for the fact that that's how they maintain corporate Democratic dominance.
Yeah, yeah, I guess it's the new DLC, right?
Yeah,
so to speak.
Well, you know, in the chat room, Arthur just asked me, why don't they have all the state primaries at the same time? It would be unwieldy, and it would be bad for business. Because first and foremost, ever since the advent of the television age, politics has become a revenue source, and in a country.
Sport.
And in a country as big as this, it's hard to ask any candidate to get it all done in, you know, X. So I understand spreading it out. I don't understand letting the Confederacy determine who the front runner is in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That's really stupid. I mean, you should at least have more balance, you know, with regard to the early contests. And, I mean, why should Iowa and New Hampshire be the big filter for all the other candidates? I mean, you know, it's
well,
not
but more than that, more than that, anymore. More than that, though, Super Tuesday. Why should Alabama and Georgia and Tennessee and God knows South Carolina determine the fate of a Democratic presidential candidate who is never going to win a general election contest, right, in any of those states?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is, it's 3 minutes before the hour, and we got to get out of here. I'm going to go meet Gerald and over at the Secret. I'm looking forward to that. I will mention that we had $200 to raise this evening. We only raised 25 of it. And so that puts us going into Moran Monday with a fundraising goal of $375, and I sincerely hope that that hole gets filled in before Monday, because it's stressful, to say the least, trying to fill in holes at the beginning of the week. But thanks, everybody. Thank you to Jenny and Ron, and thank you to Charlie, and thank you, Alex, and thank you, Tim, and Billable Rick, and thank you, as always, Sparky. And Angry, I hope you get your Skype updated so you can get into the conversation, too. Back for more on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend. And remember, Sparky, what's the status? I mean, there's no Malloy tonight, so what happens? Does the conversation just continue, or does it pick up at 12:05 Eastern Daylight Time? What?
Well, the conversation in the group as it is right now will continue for a little bit, and then I have to transfer to the other computer.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, thanks, everybody, and thank all of you who listen, who share your precious finite time on this little blue-green time machine marble hurtling through the universe to participate in ever so many ways in this conversation. Thank you very, very much indeed. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.